Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week, a new bill will allow bars to stay open late for the Rugby World Cup, plus a major meth bust has seen a number of Australian deportees involved. Here's my chat with Andrew Little. So firstly, a new bill will allow bars to stay open to screen the Rugby World Cup. How's this bill all come about?
Well, we had the same thing in 2015, but in the last few days, like MPs from various parties have said there is this problem. It's really for clubs, chartered clubs and outfits like RSAs, some of whom have applied to the local district licensing committee to extend their hours so that they can open when games are being played but have been turned down. And look, we could say to them, go back or appeal it. That's time-consuming. In the end, it was just more pragmatic and convenient to say, you know what, we'll just do what happened in 2015, pass a temporary law. And in terms of any kind of longer-term issues, look, we'll come back to that in the next couple of years.
I mean, like you say, you admit it's a problem, so why is it something that's only being dealt with effectively as a result of Rugby World Cups? Why just these temporary little periods of time?
You know, it's a good question. I think what we expected when Parliament did it last time, and so said, look, we're just going to change the law so that people can open without having to go through the palaver of district licensing committees. And bearing in mind that one of the problems under the current legislation is the inconsistency in decision making between district licensing committees, like we just said, look, we'll do it this time. But actually, we do need to look at the deeper problem. We shouldn't, you know, every 4 years of a Rugby World Cup, or for that matter, the Women's Rugby World Cup or cricket or whatever, we shouldn't have to run up against this silly situation where just because people want to open their bar for a couple of extra hours, we have to go through all this carry-on. So we'll fix the problem for 2019 Rugby World Cup, and then I think in the next couple of years we're going to look at the law and see that it fits the needs that the community wants.
So what changes would you like to see in the long run?
Look, it's only because I've been talking about this in the last few days, actually, in a different context, but when I look at the correspondence I get about the current Sale and Supply of Liquor Act, apart from the fact that, you know, you get frontline staff in our emergency departments and the police having to deal with some pretty horrendous consequences of alcohol use, the reality is, you know, most people use it responsibly, but we have had a proliferation of cut price liquor outlets in suburban areas. I'm not sure that means that the licensing arrangements are working well. And then you've got this issue about inconsistency of decision making between district licensing committees. I mean, we do have a situation where if you've got very deep pockets, which the liquor companies and the supermarkets tend to have, then you can basically batter a district licensing committee into submission, which is, I think, what happens. But if you're a community organisation wanting to, you know, deal with the harmful effects of alcohol and minimise it, then, you know, you're up against a tough job.
Right, but when we're talking about RSAs, for example, as opposed to bars and pubs, probably less of a likelihood that there's going to be many problems associated with the patrons.
Sure, and that's why you would expect, at least for outfits like that, if they want to get a couple of extra hours because you've got an occasion like a big sporting event, overseas sporting event that you want people to gather around and share some time observing, then that simply shouldn't be a hassle. But the stories I've heard is that district licensing committees are saying, oh yes, well, you have to make it an event. Apparently, the sporting event isn't enough. So there has to be a guest speaker, or there has to be some sort of entertainment, or you've got to put up streamers, or put on, you know, chips and dip or something, you know, whatever it is. And it just seems to me unnecessary conditions are being required for clubs that just want to add a couple of extra hours to their opening time.
Is there going to be any opposition to the bill you're putting forward?
Oh, I think, without being at all critical of them, the Green Party takes a view that we don't regulate alcohol well, and I think they would prefer to see a more coherent view. I'm sympathetic to that view, but I think, you know, pragmatism has weighed in here and said, let's just kind of get through this for the Rugby World Cup that kicks off in a month or so's time, and let's sort out the long-term problems at a different time.
Moving on to another issue, New Zealand's largest meth haul this week. That's quite a major issue.
Yeah, well, it is a big problem. Meth is a big problem in our communities. you talk to those who are dealing with the side effects of it and those who are dealing with addictions and drug abuse, they'll tell you that is the most commonly cited drug. You talk to the police who are dealing with the law enforcement issues, and they'll say the place is flooded with it. It's interesting reading the account of what happened with the drug haul that kind of landed up on Aipara Beach. And you know that this is a major problem. It's being imported, kind of ready made up, ready to go. Some people are making a lot of money out of it and wrecking lives and communities as a result. So it's an issue we have to get on top of. I think what I'm, you know, and I think the previous government, in fairness to them, and this government, trying to find the best ways to deal with the issue. And there was a very good program that was approved under the last government, started last year up in Northland, where the police focus on very much on the distributors and the suppliers. But what they do is when they find out who the users of meth are, particularly looking at contact lists and phones that they seize from suppliers, they approach those users and say, right, we can get you some help. And the DHB then kicks in and provides addiction and treatment and services. And I was up visiting the program recently, and in the space of 18 months, they've turned around, 36 or 37 lives, basically, households who were being very detrimentally affected by a household member who was addicted to meth, got them off it, got them back into work or at least doing something constructive. And it's a much better approach. And the kingpins, the ones who are doing the supply, you go after them and the criminal justice system deals with them. So I think it's about, that combination of, dealing with those who suffer the addiction, because they end up becoming victims in all this, but then also dealing with the supply end and the criminal justice system focusing on that part of it.
Right, and of course, in terms of that supply end, we now know that several of those involved were Australian deportees. That's got to be concerning for you.
Yeah, well, we know, and the police have had intelligence for some time, as the number of deportees from Australia have increased quite significantly. We know that the reason why many of them are deported is because either they have criminal convictions or they are associating with criminal networks, allegedly. So that raises the risk here, and the police are saying, yep, those organised criminal networks are establishing themselves in New Zealand, and we saw that with the meth case just in the last few days. So that is a reality. We know that. That's why we put extra resources into the police, who are using those resources to deal with organised crime rings, and that's going to be a growing part of police work now.
But how do we stop the issue of deportees, perpetuating or perpetrating crime in New Zealand? There must be something that can be done to try and stop that connection.
Yeah, well, we can't stop the deportations. I mean, that's Australia applying their law, whatever we might think of the law. It is their law. We will continue to talk to Australia and say we think that at least some of the deportations are unfair, in the sense that they are people who left New Zealand as infants or young children, did all their growing up in Australia, and yes, they might have entered a life of crime, but that's kind of Australia's problem, not ours. Anyway, we'll continue to have that dialogue. But otherwise, for many of those who are deported, particularly if they are deported because they've got a criminal conviction, we will know about that in advance, and many of them will be greeted by New Zealand authorities when they land here, and we can intervene and either provide assistance to kind of get housing, get work, do whatever, or provide supervision. Some of them are still seeing out their parole, so we have obligations to make sure that those conditions are met. But otherwise, for people who are deported on character grounds, not because they've committed a crime, we don't necessarily know when they're coming back and the conditions that have justified them being deported. And yet some of them are, because they're coming back to a place where they have no networks, and it's not their country, they just fall into a life of crime, and that makes it much harder.
But in terms of the political side, there are still discussions ongoing with the Australian government about their deportation system.
Oh, you do. Look, every senior minister who meets with an Australian counterpart, this issue comes up. The Prime Minister raises it in her exchanges with Scott Morrison. I meet with Peter Dutton, the Home Affairs Minister, two or three times a year, and I most recently met with them in London. I said, look, this issue is not going to go away. I will raise it, and other ministers will raise it on every occasion because it's important. And look, we have a talk about it. They are clear, and I have to say, in fairness to opposition members in Australia's federal parliament, to tell me they're not going to change the law. So the law is not going to change. Really what we're down to talking about is how the law is administered and applied and whether it's being applied fairly, particularly in relation to those who have lived the bulk of their lives in Australia and do wrong in Australia and then become our problem. And it's about building up an understanding that actually that's not right. Certainly not right for us, that's but it's self-interest on our part. But actually it's not right for them either because those folks don't get a chance to rehabilitate properly.
Right, okay. Well, yeah, certainly an issue that we'll keep on following as well. Minister, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Talk again next week.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.